Talk radio just got a little cooler.
Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
What is going on? Happy Tuesday. We've got rain in the forecast. We got people still evacuated. We need to get the load down. Thanks so much for making us a part of your day. It's the Chad Benson Show. Joining us now is the Chief Information Officer for the Department of Water Resources, Chris Orrick. Chris, we know you're busy. I appreciate you coming on today and informing everybody of what's happening. Give us the latest of what's going on currently up there at the dam and how things are starting to shape up as we get ready for another big rainstorm or two.
Sure, Chad. Thanks for having me. I'm the lead PIO on the site here. We are in the process of having crews out on our emergency spillway. They are in the middle of repairing some of the erosion that we had out there over the weekend when the emergency spillway was in use. So we have helicopters. They're lifting heavy boulders out there to place in some of these holes that were formed. And then crews are following that up with gravel and other aggregate and then filling those holes with cement so that when this weather comes later this week and we have additional rain coming down on there, we're not going to see further erosion.
How, like, so, I mean, you know, obviously the dam is extremely tall, and now that it's kind of dissipated for a little bit, we're looking at possibly another 5 days of rain out of the next, you know, six starting on Thursday. What's the potential of us getting to that point again where the spillway is being used? Is it greater, or are we looking at, you know, we think we've got everything under control?
Yeah, you know, it's actually the tallest earthen dam in the United States, and we see the water levels constantly decreasing over the last 24, 48 hours since we had the incident on Sunday night. We are looking and forecasting that this new weather system that comes in is going to be a cold weather system. So lower snow levels, decreased precipitation coming into the reservoir. At our calculations right now, we should still be good with how the amount that we've taken out to have a buffer in the reservoir that the emergency spillway is not going to be needed again. Our outflows should continue to outpace the inflows into the reservoir.
Which will be good, because obviously the video we've seen and everybody is seeing and the live pictures of just it just goes to show you what nature can do. So you had a spillway, and then you had an emergency spillway. You had a backup to the backup, and there was holes. Obviously, you know, the backup to the backup had never been used. What kind of damage was done? And was this noticeable before any of this stuff, or was this stuff that we wouldn't have noticed unless they were actually used?
Right. Well, yeah, the emergency spillway is just a barren earth hill. It was built that way. At the top is a cement wall that is at 901 feet of reservoir height. So once the water exceeds 901 feet, the water just kind of flows over the top of it and then down the hillside. And like you said, in the lifetime of this reservoir, that's never been used. So as the water started flowing down, it started to create some erosion and gouges back into the hillside towards where the reservoir was. And that's where we had the concern that ended up leading to evacuations on Sunday night.
Talking to Chris Orrick, who is with the Department of Water Resources here. He's the Public Information Officer. As we talk about this, Chris, the evacuations, it's 188,000, give or take a few. What are they being told, the, you know, chances of them coming back anytime in the near future? Or is this going to be you guys are evacuated until further notice?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. And our number one priority from the very beginning of this incident has been the safety of the community and the surrounding residents and our staff. So we need to make sure that it's safe for them to come home. We don't want to create the circumstance where we think everything's okay, they come back to their house, and then they have to leave right away again. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. We have a team that's working on it. As soon as we could get them home, that's one of our top priorities.
You know, one of the things that we've seen over the last couple of days is the finger pointing starts to come, Chris. As you know, it's political. Thing becomes political within 20 seconds. We want to know who, what, when, how, and why. Infrastructure, obviously, this dam's what, 1968 is when it was created. It doesn't seem like there's been a lot of upgrades to this. I mean, is this something we could see potentially with several other dams, or is this a one-off situation?
You know, let's remember, there is nothing affecting the dam itself. There is no imminent danger. There's no threat to the dam. We haven't seen any erosion around the dam. The spillway is off to the, if you're looking at the dam, off to the left of the actual dam structure. The emergency spillway is even further to the side of the dam. And, you know, like you're saying, Mother Nature and water are very destructive forces. And this is not something we inspect the spillway regularly. In fact, multiple agencies inspect the spillway multiple times a year. And this is just not something we saw coming. So we continue to monitor the situation. We're looking at this situation right here, right now. That's our focus, is ensuring that we have this situation contained, that we are able to put some repair actions into place on the emergency spillway, and continue to maintain that flood control level on the reservoir.
You know, moving forward, we've got, God knows, you know, I mean, it could be another month and a half, 2 months of potentially nasty rainy seasons ahead, and we have definitely gotten drenched up here. Are you guys in touch with, the weather people, talking about what the potential could be for the next month and trying to prepare for that? Or, I mean, how are you guys working to get ahead of this? Because as we know in politics, and we know in a lot of things in government, a lot of times things are reactionary rather than, you know, forward thinking.
Yeah, that's one of the large factors that's going into our corrective action and our repair action, is we're looking at the forecast. We're looking to see what the inflows are going to be and how much water we have to get out on a continuous basis. So, yeah, California, you know, 5 years of drought, and now we're looking at potentially the wettest year in the history of California. We've already exceeded the rain totals for all of last water year, and that water year starts on October 1st. So within the first 6 months of the year, of the water year, we've exceeded all of last year. So that's a forecast that we have to look at. There's a huge snowpack, and that water's going to eventually, that snow's going to eventually evaporate and come into the watershed. So that is a priority of ours, and we have some incredible people that's all they do, is they forecast that on the future, and they advise us on how much water we need to get out so that the water that comes in has a place to go.
Talking to Chris Orrick from the California Department of Water Resources. He's a public information officer, talking about the Oroville Dam and what the potential could be over the next couple days as we face another big storm heading our way. So you guys are working, you know, day and night trying to get these things shored up over there. In the meantime, what's the action plan once there is dry times like today and over maybe Sunday and stuff, to get that other spillway, you know, locked and loaded, so there isn't this, you know, spillway onto the other spillway kind of mistake? Are you guys, is it just boulders? Is it dirt? How's everything going there?
You know, we're looking at boulders. We got aggregate in there. We're putting slurry in there, cement mixture in there. There's a wide variety of actions that we're taking.
Fantastic, man. I appreciate you coming on. I know you're busy today. You got a lot of stuff going on.
Thanks,
I let you get back there and try to take care of the dam yourself. Just stick your finger in it. It'll be fine. We'll come get you as soon as the rainy season's over.
Like the little Dutch boy.
Like the little Dutch boys. Chris Orrick from the California Department of Water Resources, public information officer. Thanks so much. I tell you what, it is, you know, this has become a national story. This is huge. You've got, and it's become a national story for two reasons. One, because of obviously the fact that it's the largest dam we have in this country, 900 plus feet, and you got a spillway and there's a hole there. Two, because of the infrastructure and the infighting and the pointing fingers at one another of whether or not this thing is, you know, whose fault's what, this, that, and the other. Right now, let's not focus on whose fault. Let's get it sorted out. But there has to be some question and answers. And, you know, you've heard up to 12 years ago, engineers were talking about the fact that many of these dams are just not ready for anything. They're not. They're old, they're antiquated, they're broke, and we got to figure out a way to fix these things. What happens if we have another 6-8 weeks of torrential rain? And yeah, right now, maybe for the next storm we can get by, but then you got to talk about the runoff as we start to warm up and the rains start to come still, and then we have runoff from the snowpack and all that. How is that really going to affect? Is this going to be ongoing for the next, you know, 8 weeks? Are these people going to be out of their house for the next 8 weeks? Crazy. Absolutely crazy. And there needs to be people talking about this. There needs to be people asking questions and not just the usual political football of kicking everything around from point A to point B, but never really coming up to any kind of solution and never really coming up with any kind of accountability. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, C-H-A-D-B-E-N-S-O-N, Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. You text the program, 323-538-2423. 323-538-2423. Happy Valentine's to you and your Valentine's on this beautiful Tuesday. Somebody who's not getting a Valentine card today, General Michael Flynn, is out. We're going to talk about that. And wait till you hear about Burger King in Israel and their Happy Meal for happy adults. It's the Chad Benson Show.
And so I go till the day I die. This thing they call love, it's gonna make.
Yo, DJ, drop that beat, partner.
Oh, dear God, no.
Do you have any questions?
You're listening to The Chad Benson Show.
Love stinks.
Love stinks.
It was the public exposure of that lie. The White House knew about this weeks ago and did nothing to remove him. This is either a White House that was knowledgeable and supportive of these secret conversations with the Russians about sanctions, or that simply has a very high tolerance for a patent falsehood.
What do you do? You've been in power for less than what? A month? Now you've already got your first mini scandal that started before you even took the oath of office. You got a guy like General Michael Flynn, who I'm sure is a very good guy, who is out the door as your security advisor. Boom, gone. Somebody who was close with you throughout this campaign, but also had ties with Russia. Questions need to be asked. You're not going to hear it anywhere else. Most people are going to defend the president and talking heads of the world all day today. I'm not doing that. The president of the United States, the buck stops with you. You got caught. Most of the time in life, it's not what you do that really gets you popped and pisses people off. It's the lying about it, right? Yes, people are upset by something you've done, but the lying about the cover-up. What did you know? When did you know it? What did you know about what you knew? Meaning, you maybe knew he spoke to somebody, but you didn't know what he said. And you may have known he spoke to somebody when he was still a civilian, but you didn't know what he said. Did you know what he said, Mr. President? You know what they discussed? Did you know what they talked about? I'm telling you right now, people, this does not look good. I am praiseworthy when praise should be there, and I'm also somebody who will criticize, and right now this White House is struggling. It is. It is struggling big time. It looks amateurish at times, and this is one of those situations where I'm not thrilled by it. And if you're thrilled by it and you're drinking the Kool-Aid, you need to stop. If you think this was a very good thing and that this is some sort of witch hunt, and you're wrong. You're wrong. This is not a witch hunt. I'm glad he resigned. I wish the president would have fired him to send a message. Whether he asked for his resignation or not, he should have fired him. Ridiculous. This is Paul Ryan talking about the resignation of General Flynn.
National security is perhaps the most important function or responsibility a president has. And I think the president made the right decision to ask for his resignation. You cannot have a national security advisor misleading the vice president and others. So I think the president was right to ask for his resignation. And I believe it was the right thing to do.
Absolutely the right thing to do. He lied. They wanted to try to cover it up as much as possible in a sense of what did he lie about? What didn't he lie about? Got to be honest with yourself. This is bad. This does not look good. Your national security advisor lasted 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks? Are you kidding me? What a joke. There needs to be somebody looking into this. Absolutely. And by the way, when people are looking for you to fail, when they're looking for you to do things that are wrong, when people are looking in every way, shape, or form and scrutinizing every single move out there. That's when you need to double down and give them nothing to see. But instead, not only did you give them something to see, you gave them something to speculate about, and you gave them something to talk about ad nauseum on all the talking head shows. And it shows, trust me. Then you send the likes of Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer out there, and you spin stories here, there, and everywhere. Your stories don't look the same. It's a mess. It is a mess. Case in point, like being in Sacramento. When you get stuff coming out of the locker room with the Kings and it doesn't sound right, it looks ugly and it sounds ugly, and you're getting different kind of messages all over the place, and you're like, that's a mess. This is the same thing. This is a mess. And they need to clean it up. And they need somebody to come into this White House who has experience running things and right this ship sooner rather than later. Because all of the good that he's trying to do is going to be outshadowed if every time he does something or somebody in the administration does something that doesn't look right, sound right, and that's all anybody focuses on. I want him to succeed. But I tell you what, this right here, not a good thing. It looks ugly. It looks bad. And already one of the people that you were hoping to have with you from top to bottom, a trusted person, lies to the vice president. Then you somewhat neuter the vice president by not acknowledging it and dealing with it ASAP. Then it gets out of control. And now he's had to resign in shame. And you guys look like you don't know what you're doing. Button it up, or it's going to be a long 4 years of your own making. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, C-H-A-D-B-E-N-S-O-N. It is Valentine's Day, ladies and men. This will pertain to you as well. Shannon Cleary is going to join us next. We're going to talk about pitfalls of relationships and how to get rid of that man that you don't like and how to find the man you do like. What are the do's and don'ts of dating? Because that's who we are, kids. We give you everything. We're infotainment at its highest.
The Chad Benson Show. Talk radio just got a little cooler.
Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
What is up, party people? Happy Valentine's Day. Chad Benson Show loves you. We want to make sure that you're doing the right things in the dating world, especially you ladies out there. Joining us now, a lady by the name of Shannon Cleary. She's an author, a sexpert, a blogger. Her book is dropping today. She dated the hashtag asshats but married the good guy. Shannon, thanks so much for taking time with us today. How are you?
I am doing very well. I'm happy to be here.
So let's talk about who are the bad guys that ladies need to avoid dating?
Right. The first thing I want to say is this is the bad. They're bad guys and bad girls. So any men that are listening, you may recognize these women as well. You got to keep your eyes peeled. So I have him as Mr. Need for Speed. So this is the guy that comes at you 100 miles an hour. He's never been so intoxicated. He just wants your phone number. He wants to make you shake you up and make you instant girlfriend. And then what happens is once you're hooked, he cools down and disappears. Fear of engulfment. So if you meet a guy that's coming on strong, take a few steps back, take a deep breath, and wait and see. The next guy is Mr. You Suck. And what I mean by that is the criticism begins to come. You've been dating a few weeks, and pretty soon maybe he doesn't like the way your hair looks. Maybe he doesn't like what you're wearing. Then it's your personality. You're kind of needy. You're kind of clingy. So this is a guy that is trying to make you feel bad so that you don't feel entitled to have any needs. So you got to keep an eye out for that person. There are a few more. There is Mr. KGB agent. And he doesn't want you to know too much or he might have to kill you, right? So don't get near his computer. Don't get near his phone. You know, he's on ghost ops, which means there might be some other women floating around out there somewhere that he doesn't want you to know about. And as I said, there are some women that can behave that way as well. Now I'm trying to think. I had a couple more. Oh, Mr. Mopes.
You got Mr. Cautious, Mr. One Way Street, Mr. Mopes. There's just a lot of guys out there and gals that, you know.
Poor guys. I'm just really picking on them. But it is, like I said, not gender specific. But since I'm a woman, that was my experience where I always wanted my guy to come with me to meet my family and hang out with my friends and to present ourselves as a couple. He always dragged his heels. But if he would go, boy, would he mope. You know, it would just be like the black hole of Calcutta. You know, you couldn't get the guy to talk. So it almost wasn't worth the trouble. And really what these guys are indicating is that they really appreciate the comfort of having you. They know that you're going to be there for them sexually. They know you're going to fulfill their intimacy needs. But they do have a fear of being of engulfment. I mean, they used to call it, you know, they were noncommittal, but this fear of being too responsible for a partner. And it's fear-based, you know, on both parts. So, yeah, for Valentine's
absolutely. We're talking
to avoid those guys.
We're talking to Shannon Kaleri here. She's an author, a sexpert, a blogger. She got a book coming out today. It drops today, as they would say in the business. It's called She Dated the Hashtag Asshats But Married the Good Guy, How to Go from Toxic Love to Real Love in 12 Exercises. Now, you talk about these guys and gals, obviously, it's the same thing. But what should you be looking for in a partner? What are the signs where you're like, you know, this is that good guy?
Right. Well, you know, here's the thing. I don't want to be too retro 50s, but the first thing that we have to do as women and men is when we go out dating, we need to have a game plan. You know, we need to know what our goal is. Is it just a fun Saturday night? Is it just a casual sex partner? Or do you want something more? And if you do, then what happens is you present differently, you know, and you kind of repel the guys or girls that are not looking for what you're looking for. I think what happens is we go in and we just want to be easygoing. We think that's more appealing. So we're not really being true to ourselves right up front. That's number one. And I think what you're looking for is someone who's not rushing, someone who really comes across as a grown-up. So you leave the encounter. You don't feel high or intoxicated by the encounter. You feel curious. You feel intellectually stimulated. You feel like, wow, I feel kind of safe around that person. I feel kind of like, you know, he's a good guy. But it's not a big, passionate rush. So that's what I think. It really does depend on what you're looking for. For me, when I was in my 30s, I was ready. I wanted to have a family. And I wanted to not just have a family, but have a family in a loving, stable home. So when I finally started dating my husband of 17 years, the first thing I felt with him was like respect. I felt respected. I didn't feel objectified. And I felt like he really wanted to know what I was thinking. So,
absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, that's just being a good guy. But you talked about when you were in your 30s. Obviously, if you're in your 20s, you're in your 30s, you're in your 40s, things are a lot different because when you're in your 20s, you're having fun. You don't really want anything.
Yeah.
30s, maybe early 30s, the same thing. You're starting to look for something and you're in your 40s. You've probably already done it once before. And now you know what you don't want. So is this kind of time, you know, kind of time adjusted for love?
Yes. Absolutely. And here's the tricky thing about sex. I'll just say this. In your 20s, it's like, I'm going to be an explorer and an adventurer, and I'm going to have some notches on my belt. And there are women that are exactly that way, just the same as men. It's like, how many experiences can I have to talk about one day when I'm married and settled? The problem is that when we, especially as women, when we become sexually intimate with a man, there's all these chemicals that are released in our brain, oxytocin, dopamine, all of these things. And we think, hey, I can have casual sex. It's no big deal. But, you know, it leads to falling in love. And it really is a chemical reaction. And that's why I say to women in their 20s, sure, maybe you're not ready to get married. I mean, you know, maybe you do want to have more experiences and adventures. But take care of yourself. Really know if something feels good and right for you or if it feels like I think I'm in over my head. You know, because I think we say we can casually date, but I think it's more complicated than we want to admit. Does that make sense?
Talking to Shannon Kaleri. She is an author, a sexpert, a blogger. She got a new book coming out today. She dated the hashtag asshats, but married the good guy. How to go from toxic love to real love in 12 exercises on this Valentine's Day, making sure all of you understand that we care about you here at the Chad Benson Show. What are some of the things that, you know, so you talk about, you know, okay, this is what you should look for in a good guy. But at the same time, like for men, why do men get paralyzed or commitment phobes or whatever, you know, as you called them the Mr. Need for Speed or whatever. What is it about that, the engulfment thing? Is it chemical? Is it just mental?
Right. Well, here's what I think. I think for one thing, men and women are very different biologically. We have very, very different needs. I mean, the fact that women get pregnant and have children, that's a whole other ball of wax. You know, it makes it, I think that we're just sort of made by nature to be more capable of settling down, because we're going to be giving birth to an infant that needs to be cared for and is completely dependent. And I think I do believe there is something that is biologically very different between men and women. Having said that, I believe that I was afraid of commitment, and that's why I dated noncommittal men, because I did have a boyfriend somewhere in my mid-20s who wanted marriage and wanted all of me, and it scared the crap out of me. And I think some of that stems from childhood. You know, in my case, I had a parent that I parented when I was a child. And there are a lot of children that end up in that situation. The divorce rate skyrocketed in the 70s. So a lot of the kids were dealing with parents that were really kind of devastated by divorce. And so a lot of kids ended up having to nurture and care for or worry about the emotional and mental state of a parent. And then what happens is when you become an adult, it's terrifying to get involved in a situation where you feel that sense of responsibility. So that part of it, I think, is not gender oriented. I really do think that you look back in your child and you start doing a little bit of investigation about why today you feel. And it's funny, when they say commitment phobic, it really is a phobia. I mean, it really is this feeling of claustrophobia. I personally had to date enough toxic guys for me to say, you know what, I surrender, I'm ready to commit. And it was only then that I think that I was available for a man who wanted a commitment.
You know, you talk about toxic guys. Why is it that both men and women, over and over again, it's like if you could choose the wrong person out of 1,000, you would do it, right? Like at 99 out of the 100 people are the right person. That one person, though, you could walk in a room and go, that's the one right there I'm going to make the mistake with tonight.
Yeah, exactly. I always make the joke that in my 20s, my vagina could walk into a bar and she'd be like, I want that one. He looks like he just came out of Rikers Penitentiary. That's hot, you know? And I think there's something about the dangerous person that's just, you know, kind of sexy and thrilling. You know, my brother married when he was very young. He was 22 and he's Mormon. So I thought, well, okay, it's his religion. I'm not Mormon, but he is. And I was, you know, interviewing him for my married sex series because he and his wife, they were each other's only lovers. And he said to me, I really do think there's two types of people, the thrill seekers and the commitment phobes. And he's like, the thrill seekers, they just want to have adventures. And so I do. I think that's what happens is we keep picking the same person just in a different body because we have that impulse. We're sort of chemically addicted to that kind of drama and adventure. And I think it takes a real conscious effort. I had to work some 12-step recovery to sort of stop that pattern of behavior. And they actually, you know, it's funny, the medical professionals now deem things like addiction, whether it be love addiction or drug addiction, as a mental illness. And so you have to address it in a very practical way. It's really not airy-fairy. There really is a map, believe it or not.
Talking to Shannon Cleary here, we got one more question for you. Why is it, sure, Shannon, as you know, here you are, you're an author, you're a sexpert, you're a blogger, you're a dating relationship coach. Why is it some people can't let go of somebody in their past? It doesn't matter who, because let's be real, we always compare in life. It doesn't matter what it is, food, relationships, jobs, friends, you know, sports, where everything is a comparison in life. Why is it some people, but men and women, can't let go of something in the past?
I think there's two reasons. I think one reason is we have a competitive nature. And when somebody breaks our heart, or he's the one that got away, there's this, it sort of wounds us right at our core, which is our sexuality. I mean, sexuality is a large part of what we are. And when we've been rejected in that way, that's a core wound. And so we want that, we want to prove that guy or girl wrong. It's like, look what you missed. And that's when all the social media starts to be really bad, because you're posting things to look good, or you reconnect with that person. And the fact is, what you find, and I know a lot of people find this, is they go back to that person and the cycle just repeats. So I think that there's that competitive nature. And then there's also the psychology behind, being attracted to the same kind of person. And what happens is, if we had something ruptured with our parents when we were young and we were abandoned in some way, and then the same abandonment occurs in that one who got away, we still desperately want to fix that core wound. What we don't really understand is you can't fix it. You got to let it go. And so I do believe it becomes a bit of a fixation, obsession, and compulsion. And that's when you have to get out of isolation, get yourself into a recovery group, somewhere where people are struggling with the same issues, tell all your dirty secrets, get them up and out. And once you do that, you start to get healthier. So that's my long answer.
Appreciate you. Long answer there. Her name is Shanna Cleary. She's got a book coming out today. She dated the hashtag asshats, but married the good guy. How to go from toxic love to real love in 12 exercises. Happy Valentine's Day. Go enjoy the rest of your day. We appreciate you coming on today.
Lovely to be here. Thanks, Chad.
I tell you what. Thank you. Love is crazy. Love is wacky. Love is a lot of things. But it's awesome as well. Can be many different things to you. Hope you got a little bit out of that on this most festive days, Valentine's Day, which is essentially Woman's Day. And there's a man's day a month from now, but we can't talk about that on the radio because we'd get in trouble. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, ChadBenson, Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. You can text the program 323-538-2423. Speaking of truth and how it can hurt, wait till you hear this obituary. And we've got more stuff coming out, including breaking news about whether or not Trump actually knew about Flynn and what took place about 2-3 weeks ago. Yikes! Chad Benson Show.
I love you.
I love you too.
Wow, that's terrible.
I don't mean to offend you.
Then don't.
The Chad Benson Show.
Happy Valentine's Day. Hope you're doing well on this most festive of days. New York Times is reporting that Trump was informed 17 days ago that Flynn had not been truthful on Russian contacts and what took place. Did he know? I don't know. But this is getting ugly fast, and you better figure it out. You better come clean if you want to get ahead of this right now, because the more you try to hide, the more it snowballs, the worse it gets for you. The more that you do these kind of things where you start playing, I did know, what did I know? After a while, there's only so many people that are going to fall on the sword, right? Because they all have to have lives afterward. Not everybody's a billionaire. So at some point in time, you're going to have to come clean, and we're going to need to hear from the president. Sean Spicer, you can roll him out there all you want, and Kellyanne Conway. But as the president, the buck stops with you, and you better stop that buck ASAP, or you're going to be in a lot more hot water than you realize. Little things like this. It starts little and it ends up big. And when you've already got a spotlight on you, bam. That's like the sun right about now. Bam. Obituaries. How many of us have gone to funerals and thought to ourselves, people always get up there and say nice things, right? So-and-so's this, such-and-such this. He was wonderful. She was nice. And the whole time, you're like, God, they were horrible people. Well, Leslie Ray Sharping died in late January, according to his obituary. The 74-year-old's brutally frank remembrance stated that for 29 years, he lived longer than expected and much longer than he deserved. The obituary was posted on the Carnes Funeral Home website. According to multiple news outlets, it didn't seem to be online Monday, but it was saved. And it is brutal. The honesty of him. According to the obituary, Sharping left behind two relieved children, a son and a daughter, along with countless other victims, including ex-wives, relatives, friends, neighbors, doctors, nurses, and random strangers. Some of the stuff they said about this guy is real and honest from his own kids. Talking about how he tortured and he abused, he was vulgar, he was horrible. It was honest, probably. Right? All of it. In life, you know what? I always ask for honesty. Just give me honesty. As honest as, like, you know, whatever honesty you can give. Because you may not have all of the story, so you're giving your honest point of view from all that you know. You may only know 70% of a story or 50%, so this is all I know. Stuff could have happened, right? You don't know everything from top to bottom. But I tell you what, I think I always tell everybody, you know, when you ask somebody something, be prepared for the answer. You may not like it. Now, you can accept it and you can move on with your life. All of us. And there's ways you can deliver certain things. Totally fine. But I think we could all admit there are people in our lives that have passed away. And it's like, man, that was just the worst human being ever. And people get up there and they lie. Well, so-and-so was nice and such was nice. When really you want to say, that was the worst human being I've ever met in my life. He couldn't have died soon enough. He was horrible. He was absolutely the worst. Hell doesn't even want him. Or she was mean. She used to hit a dog with a rubber hose. She was the worst person ever. But everybody lies, right? Even in death, they're lying to your face. Oh, goodness. Solid fun. First hours, the Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, ChadBenson. Text the program 323-538-2423. 323-538-2423. It's the Chad Benson Show.
The Chad Benson Show.